It is now really a great pleasure for me to introduce our next speaker of the day. Jonas Himmelstrand is here all the way from Sweden. I first became aware of his work because I was researching the daycare topic here in Canada. And Jonas would send helpful email updates. I'm not even sure how I got on them, but there they popped into my box, talking about the realities of family policy in Sweden. And what I immediately noticed is that what I was learning from somebody living in Sweden was not what I was hearing from the Canadian press. For example, I remember one coming through showing higher rates of mental health disorders among Swedish youth, and that is absolutely not the story that we are getting from the Canadian media. Jonas has been a consultant in business for over 25 years, focusing on leadership, education, and personal development. He is the author of Following Your Heart in the Social Utopia of Sweden, and he's publishing another book at the end of this year. He's the founder of his own institute, the Mireia Institute, which I'm told is as close as a person who is an English speaker will get to pronouncing it appropriately. He focuses there on close relationships as the key to building welfare, development, and democracy. And closer to home, he's partnered with a Canadian psychologist, Dr. Gordon Neufeld, in writing, he's a representative in Sweden. Dr. Gordon Neufeld is the author of Hold On to Your Kids, Why Parents Need to Matter More Than Peers, and his co-author came and presented 2 years ago at the IMFC conference, Dr. Gabor Maté, which was another excellent presentation. Jonas lives in Uppsala, Sweden, with his wife and three kids. He homeschools them and plays the tenor saxophone in his spare time. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be invited all the way from Sweden. An honor to present here for the first time in Canada, and actually for the first time the subject in North America as well. I'm going to talk about the Swedish family policies, which you could say were instituted about 35 years ago, 1975, when the Swedish government made the decision to make a comprehensive daycare system, and it's been built out since then. 1975, there were 10% of Swedish children going to daycare, and now you can talk about 90% today. The results that we can see after 35 years, this is something probably no other nation in the world can look at. We know from 35 years of experience what this leads to, and you can, choosing the right statistics, paint a very beautiful picture. But when you look at the actual life in Sweden, you see more alarming things. The results in child development, in learning, in parenthood, and family are quite alarming. And when you look at the consequences you're beginning to see today, I mean in this very last month, you can see that this is also getting alarming results in politics and even democracy. And in a sense, it's difficult when you're in the middle of something to see, but the sense many of us in Sweden are having is that this may actually be a lot more alarming than you're actually aware of. It's a very alarming situation in a sense, and nothing bad is going to happen in the next year, but over the next 10 or 20 years, it's a situation that alarms you. So just some personal details about me. Now, Andrea told you most of it. I wrote this book, which is in Swedish, which is why I'm doing a short translation in English by the end of the year. It's Following Your Heart in the Social Utopia of Sweden. It was, in a way, my way of, as a management consultant, I was used to making sense out of work team and businesses, and I saw a lot of signs in Sweden that I was worrying about. You know, why do we have these problems in one of the richest countries in the world with, you know, great social welfare, with great evenly distributed wealth, every figure on wealth, material wealth was high. Why are we having the problems? So I, in a way, took on Sweden as a consultant project, and when I finished it 4 years ago, I realized today that I made one mistake with this book. I wrote it in the wrong language. Nobody would touch it in Swedish except, you know, a few people like those who were kind of interested in this. I did manage to sell and almost sold 1,000 copies of it today. And I'll get back to that in a moment. So I founded the Mireille Institute. I'm also the member of the HARO National Board, which is Sweden's leading family organization with a critical view on the Swedish family policies. Now you would imagine that it's a big organization. It's not. It's a completely voluntary work organization with 1,000 members, although we've had some success in coming down into Europe. I'm also the president of RUHUS, which is the Swedish Association for Home Education. Now, I know that's not too common in Canada, but it's a lot more common in Canada than it is in Sweden. And also, I will give you an example. This will show, in a way, the real problem with Swedish family policies, in a way you can see in their essence in the view on homeschooling in Sweden. I'm a self-employed management consultant since 1981, so I've basically financed all my work with writing it through my own work. I'm married to Tamara, father of 3 children, and don't see it too well here. Anyway, this is my family, and you could say that this is, in a way, the big support. I'm not a political conservative. In fact, I was brought up on the left, and you know the Swedish left is very left. when I was young, I was into that, but you know, I grew up, started my business, and had a family, and things kind of changed with the life experience. I'm not a family traditionalist in any sense. My mother was a second wave feminist, and I was kind of seen as an exception, so I got a good upbringing in my younger years. I'm not religious. I have not studied religious texts. When I went to school, there was Christianity in schools, so I know some of the biblical stories, but you have to realize Sweden is an extremely secular nation with a very low idea about family. And all of these of us in Sweden who are engaged in these issues, what we come from is solely from the experience of the attachment with our children. It's like we've seen there is something here that's not being addressed in our society, and it seems to be something fantastic. Why is it not addressed? So you can say in a way that Sweden is a society that has gone completely non-traditionalist, non-conservative, non-religious, and in the midst of this, families are rediscovering family, rediscovering children, and we're starting to build something in a way from scratch. And although we're very few of us in Sweden, still you must say that we're a growing movement, and if you look at the few people we are, we may be maybe a dozen people working, you know, on voluntary, no financial support whatsoever, but we are making some noise in the media and we are getting some way through, although we haven't made any big political decisions yet. So basically where how I started this thing is like, I think it was in the year 2000. I came to school to do a training on counseling skills. I haven't been in school for 10 years. This was my first consultant job in the school in many years. And I remember this morning, I come in there to this setting up my things, and the headmaster, the principal of the school, come towards me and says, "Isn't it terrible? I mean, the psychological health of our youth is just going down so much. It's causing us so many problems. It's so difficult. It's so different than it was 20 years ago." And then at lunch, the teachers were on to me. They were all talking about this. They were alarmed. They were concerned. And I wasn't aware of it. I was kind of surprised. And I was like, how is this? 2 years later, we had a very intense debate in Sweden on the great number of Swedes on sick leave. Now, we've got a generous sick leave insurance in Sweden. And still, why would Swedes be among the least healthy people in the world, or at least in Europe at the time, especially women? And this is kind of what grabbed my attention to this. Then I started having more and more women coming to my workshops with one-year-olds who were complaining to me. They just said a sentence fleeting, you know, "It's so painful to leave my one-year-old in daycare. I didn't really want to, but I didn't see any choice. But it's so painful. It doesn't feel right." And by now I was starting to put these things together, and 2003 I started working on my book. It took me 4 years. I got it together. Wasn't much noise about it. I met a few members of parliament though, and one of them got me to do a seminar at the Swedish parliament, and I had 30 parliamentarians there. I got 15 minutes to summarize my 600-page book. I did my best, and few weeks after, in January 2, 2009, I just thought, this is only 6 pages. I could translate this to English and put it on the web. I did. And then I started to learn the power of the English language. Because since then, things have evolved. I got involved in a European Commission project on future family policies. I got to speak in Portugal in May last year. And then I've spoken in Brussels, in Italy, in Hungary. Now I'm in Ottawa. In 2 weeks, I'll be in Portugal again. 3 weeks, I'll be in Ireland. And in 4 weeks from now, I'll be in New York on the United Nations, where I'm invited to an expert panel, although I'm not formally an expert. I'm just simply a consultant. So what I'm going to talk about today is some basics about the Swedish family model, so you know what I'm talking about, the facts that we know about. I'm going to talk something about the outcomes, and this is what is not known in the world. You do not know about the outcomes because you look at very general figures about income, about how many children are in daycare, about things like that. And although if you've read the PISA results from our schools, you should be a bit alarmed seeing that Sweden is just going down and Canadian schools are bringing a lot better results than what Swedish schools are doing. I will look at some possible causal explanations for this. This will always be difficult, but it's actually quite easy if you're willing to have some psychological sense. I'll look something at the social and political outcomes, which may actually be even more alarming. Something about what the Swedes want and something about the conclusions that we can make from this. So you know probably all about the great Swedish statistics. We have the lowest infant mortality in the world. We have a very high life expectancy. I think only Japan is ahead of us, or Japanese women. We have a relatively high birth rate, which of course hides the fact that who's raising the children. It's not so much the parents in Sweden anymore. We have low child poverty. We have among the lowest in the world and only half of the average in the European Union. We have a comprehensive daycare scheme, which is highly subsidized at very little cost to parents. We have a very high education spending. I believe we spend among the most money per pupil, both in daycare and in schools, of any nation in the world. We should expect absolutely brilliant results looking at the social welfare we have. We do not have those results in Sweden. We have equality. Sweden has a tradition of equality. The wealth is relatively evenly distributed. We don't really have very poor people in Sweden, and we have fewer very rich people. So the difference is growing, but still, by international comparison, we're a relatively equality country. There's a great focus on gender equality in Sweden, and some people call it like a state religion of today. In actual fact, though, it mostly you'll see it in parliament. Our parliament is very impressive with a 50-50 split, and you know we're probably way ahead of you in Canada in that. But when you look at it close, you'll see that hides some figures that are not so impressive. We have a 16-month parental leave, which gives 13 months at 80% of your pay, and then an extra 3 months at a lower pay. Of the 13 months at the higher level, the father has to take out 2 months of that. So they want to make it a split, so we could have in a few years that you have 8 months to the mother and 8 months to the father. This is all for gender equality. Now, if you look at the basics of the model, you first of all realize that we have no babies in daycare in Sweden. This is something our parental leave does. People are at home. There are no children at all below 12 months of age in daycare. Look at the statistics. There were 4, I think, in all of Sweden. And I think this is something good about the Swedish model, that you have this generous parental leave. It means that everybody can afford to be at home with the children the first year, no matter what your salary is. But then it radically changes. At 16, between 16 and 18 months, there's a radical shift, because then the message is given, now your child needs daycare and you as a parent need to work. So a full 92% of all 18-month to 5-year-olds in Sweden are in daycare. This was maybe around 80% 10 years ago and around 70% 20 years ago. And it's shows no sign of reducing. We're going to see this creeping up slowly. as the years are coming. Today, also parents who are at home, being unemployed, or having parental leave for a smaller child are encouraged to have the children daycare. So above 3 years of age, they get free 15 hours a week daycare. And in the last election, our social democratic leader said she wanted to increase it to 30 hours per week free for parents who are at home. Why? Because every child has a right to daycare. Every child has a right to daycare is what the leading politician of the Social Democratic Party said in the last lecture. And you'll see today that there are some local governments who are actually starting to affect this already now, although they don't have to do this. The daycare is low cost to parents. Basically, you pay $150 a month, and it's a limit to it so that even if you've got an extremely high salary and you've got three kids in daycare, you will never pay more than about $300 per month. There's a maximum tax. You will never go above a certain level. And this is, of course, highly subsidized. The subsidy on the average is $20,000 Canadian dollars per year and child. That's the subsidy for every child. And you might know other figures here, but it's a very high sum. And trust Sweden to know how to use taxed money. There's no national home care allowance or any tax benefits. Those of us in the family movement in the 2006 election, we did manage to push for getting some form of home care allowance. And some people even say, one minister said that it was actually the family movement who helped the center-right government come into power because of this question. Now, once in government, there was a lot of discussion about this because there's only one party in our current four-party coalition who actually wants a home care allowance, which is also the smallest party. It's the Christian Democrats. They have about 5% of the votes. And there was a lot of discussion, but after a year, they decided on a home care allowance that was optional for local governments to use. They didn't have to use it, and it was around $400 Canadian dollars per month. And because politicians don't like this, they want kids to be in daycare and families, parents to work, only one-third of the municipalities actually offer this. And it's difficult to use, and it's not as popular as hoped to be. And the argument against it is, listen, nobody wants to use this, so why have it? No? On the other hand, they will argue it would be really dangerous if too many people use this, because then we would have to lay down daycare. So they cannot decide if it's very popular or very unpopular. And it's this enormous cultural pressure on daycare in Sweden, which I do not think you can understand in Canada. And I'm speaking to Canadian parents and speaking to Canadians for the last week here, I realize you cannot understand the intense cultural pressure that this is in Sweden and how normalized it is. The daycare and dual earner household is strongly encouraged, both culturally and financially. Sweden's got very high taxes. The tax system is designed for the dual earner family. You're not supposed to be able to support a family on one income, and this is the outspoken policy of our government, whether it's on the left side or on the right side, because daycare is seen as good for children and work is good for parents. Home care is actively discouraged and socially marginalized. When you have a child and you bring your child to the medical professions to have it checked up at 6 months, they will say to you, the nurse will say to you, I hope now that you've signed up for a good daycare place of your choice. When you come there at a year, they will remind you again, now have you signed up for a good daycare place? And as one mother told me when she came at 18 months, your children is not in daycare? Oh, you have to sign him up for daycare, you know. He needs to be in daycare to learn to be social, and you need to be in work. That is how strong it is. And every single government institution will put forth the great quality of Swedish daycare and how good it is for children and how it makes them socialized and how it improves their mathematics. Note that mathematics was the poorest subject in the PISA research. It's actually the one where we're below the OECD average. If you take the extreme, homeschooling is in effect illegal. There are 100 homeschooled children in Sweden. Now, transferring that to a Canadian population, that would mean 350 homeschooled children in all of Canada. Now, I know you've got something like 20 or 30 or 40,000 in Canada. And although this is a small thing, this is in a way where you can really see the family policies. They are extremely hard on this. You may have heard the story of Dominic Johansson, who 2 years ago was captured on a plane. The police went into a plane when the family was going to India, the birth country of the boy's mother. The police came in there and took him, and the parents didn't see him again until, you know, once every 6 weeks or so. And the reason was homeschooling, they say. Actually, there were no reason. They just took the boy and then found out the arguments afterwards. I've read some of the verdicts, and the verdict from the courts are scary, because it actually says, as the boy has not been in daycare and now not the first year in school, he's been harmed. Which is, you know, absolutely unbelievable, but it actually says it in writing in the court verdict. I've met the father 2 weeks ago of this boy, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with this father. There's nothing wrong with the love of his son. There's no reason to believe that he is in any way not a good parent to his son, rather the contrary. And this, of course, has made Swedish homeschoolers are terrified at this. It's a scary situation, and you see basically homeschooling parents being prosecuted either with high fines of up to $40,000 Canadian per year. There's one family being threatened with $40,000 Canadian for a year of homeschooling. Others get directly put to social authorities, and we have a family in Stockholm who's now having their fourth social investigation in 2 years, and they are determined to find out something wrong. I know the family. They're wonderful children. They're a wonderful family. There's absolutely nothing wrong with them whatsoever. And here you have, in a way, the family values, the scary part of the Swedish government. And we're getting a new law now, 1st of July, that's in effect going to make it illegal. And I've looked this through, and in fact, Sweden is the only democratic country ever to make homeschooling illegal, in fact. Unless you count Germany in 1938 as a democratic country.